And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And a confrontation on campus with threats of arrests, with tents and demonstrators camping out. Which campus? Columbia University, the Ivy League university that is located in uptown Manhattan in New York, the northern part of Manhattan Island. We will tell you what's going on there. This is one day after the Egyptian-born president of Columbia University testified before Congress about anti-Semitism on campus. We will bring all that to you. There's also a complete surprise, I think, to most political observers, of an endorsement for President Trump in 2024. Why a surprise? Because it's from one of the most intense critics of the Trump administration, who served in the Trump administration, then rejected it, and actually wrote a book largely about his horror at the way President Trump ran the presidency. Now he's supporting him. And the family feud within which family? America's first family, if you are a Democrat, the Kennedys. A big battle within the family about supporting Robert Kennedy Jr. And speaking of Robert Kennedy Jr., one of the dumbest things to come out so far in this entire campaign has been a new theory about HIV/AIDS. And the theory advanced by someone who was seriously considered as a vice presidential nominee along with Robert Kennedy and his independent campaign for the presidency. And then you've all heard something, probably, about this false fear of furries. That always sounds good because you can get three F's in, together in the same phrase. Okay, what are furries? They are people who want to dress and act like animals. There had been a great deal of fact-checking on this. This is not a sweeping national trend. However, it is an issue in a middle school in Utah. We will bring you the latest on the furries problem, which is probably one of the less important problems in the country at the moment. One of the biggest and most important problems, of course, is what do you do about Iran? We'll be talking to Michael Rubin about whether the New York Times is right saying that Israel made a terrible mistake to take on and wipe out those two Iranian generals because, well, why? That issue, Iran versus Israel, we'll be speaking with Michael Rubin of the American Enterprise Institute coming up. We'll also be speaking with Daniel Henninger, columnist, indispensable columnist for the Wall Street Journal, about what is it that saved Israel this time from a missile attack by the Iranians. There is a more recent missile attack by the Iranians in which 14 Israeli soldiers were injured, apparently six of them seriously. And may they recover. There's also, of course, the issue of what is happening in the Congress of the United States, where once upon a time, another member of the Kennedy family, John F. Kennedy, the one who became president, who succeeded in his presidential pursuit, of course, Ted Kennedy, that brother, went nowhere. He lost the nomination to Jimmy Carter, and considering how poorly Jimmy Carter did in the election that followed, it really does say something about Ted Kennedy's difficulties. In any event, the one who made it to the presidency, John F. Kennedy, was also the author of a book called Profiles in Courage, which won the Pulitzer Prize. And regardless of the now historical reports that suggest that Kennedy did not write the book himself, it was written by his chief aide, who I actually was privileged to know and to interview several times, Ted Sorensen. Who'd ever really denied that he wrote the book? But in any event, the book is about people who show unexpected political courage at the risk of their own career. Right now, there's a Republican named Mike Johnson, who's the Speaker of the House, who may be exemplifying a profile in courage. Because on this issue of Ukraine funding, where it does look like, thank God, the road jam in the Congress of the United States and the House of Representatives is going to be broken. Mike Johnson is going to join Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader of the Senate, is going to join most Republicans across the country, if you believe polling, who is going to join at least half the Republicans who are in the House of Representatives and virtually all of the Democrats and President Biden in providing desperately needed aid to the nation of Ukraine. The fact that this has become such a hot issue is not a healthy indication for the Republican Party right now. There should be, at this point, and I would love to be part of it, a rallying to the strong support of Speaker Johnson and the casting out of those furries, those freakishly self-destructive Republicans who want to knock him out as Speaker and to present another illustration of Republican fecklessness. This was Mike Johnson yesterday speaking in the Capitol, talking about the lesson that he drew from the situation he is in and that he's leading the nation out of. There's a Speaker of the House, clip 10.
My philosophy is you do the right thing and you let the chips fall where they may. If I operated out of fear over a motion to vacate, I would never be able to do my job. Look, history judges us for what we do. This is a critical time right now, a critical time on the world stage. I could make a selfish decision and do something that that's different, but I'm doing here what I believe to be the right thing. I think providing lethal aid to Ukraine right now is critically important. I really do. I really do believe the intel and the briefings that we've gotten that I believe Xi and Vladimir Putin and Iran really are an axis of evil. I think they're in coordination on this. I think that Vladimir Putin would continue to march through Europe if he were allowed. I think he might go to the Balkans next. I think he might have a showdown with Poland or one of our NATO allies. To put it bluntly, I would rather send bullets to Ukraine than American boys. My son is going to begin in the Naval Academy this fall. This is a live fire exercise for me, as it is so many American families. This is not a game. It's not a joke. We can't play politics with this. We have to do the right thing. And I'm going to allow an opportunity for every single member of the House to vote their conscience and their will on this. And I think that's the way this institution is supposed to work. And I'm willing to take personal risk for that because we have to do the right thing, and history will judge us.
And history, I do believe, will judge Mike Johnson well, whether or not he survives the attempts by Marjorie Taylor Greene and others to knock him out of his perch as Speaker of the House. In fact, Marjorie Taylor Greene brought up the issue of Nazis and Nazi Germany. In what context? Well, we will get you the latest on that. And also the fact-checking about this furries crisis in Nebo, Utah. And not a place you'd expect to have a furries crisis, with reports that the furries, the children, because these are middle schoolers who dress as animals, are guilty of biting and scratching their fellow classmates in order to go further and even more convincingly in their animal impersonations. Really, do you think we can move beyond this crisis in the country? Let us hope so. We will be right back on The Medved Show.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
Oh, Michael Medved show, the debate in Congress between, it's basically between the Reagan Republicans and people who aren't even Trump Republicans. I don't know, what are they, Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene Republicans, and people who are so far out in right field that they basically prefer Vladimir Putin to America's allies in Ukraine, who recirculate very directly Putin propaganda against the Iranian government and leadership, calling them Nazis, despite the fact that many of the leading personnel in those governments are Jewish. As is the case with President Zelensky, who remains deserving of the kind of admiration that he has been receiving generally for the last several years, except from people like Marjorie Taylor Greene. Here's her talking about why she is opposed to any continued aid to Ukraine. Listen, clip 8.
And there's frequent pictures all over. Anybody can find them. Of Nazis. Here they are. This looks like something you'd see out of Hitler's Germany from Ukraine. And this is something that's extremely important to talk about. According to the Council of Europe, however, Ukraine is ranked well in the top half of countries in terms of how corrupt they are. In the last 5 years, Ukraine is ranked close to the countries like Gambia, Iran, Myanmar, and Sierra Leone in corruption. That's not very free and democratic company to keep.
Okay, there was a reaction to that from one of the Jewish members of the House of Representatives. He's a Democrat from Florida. His name is Jared Moskowitz. And he had this reaction to his colleague, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
You know, the idea that we pretend that behavior is acceptable and regular. There are no concentration camps in Ukraine. They're not taking babies and shooting them in the air because they're Jewish. There's no gas chambers. There's no ovens. They're not railing people in. They're not ripping gold out of people's mouth. They're not taking stuff out of their home. They're not trying to erase a people. They're Ukrainians. Stop bringing up Nazis and Hitler. The only people who know about Nazis and Hitler are the 10 million people and their families who lost their loved ones, generations of people who were wiped out. It is enough of this disgusting behavior using Nazis as propaganda. You want to talk about Nazis? Get yourself over to the Holocaust Museum. You go see what Nazis did. It's despicable that we use that and we allow it and we sit here like somehow it's regular.
I mean, this is, of course, the distinguished member of Congress who explained the wildfires in California as the result of Jewish space lasers. You may remember that. There was also this comment from Jamie Raskin, a Democrat from Maryland, who is now well advanced in his recovery from cancer, by the way. And here's the point he made about his distinguished colleague, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and her recent rant. Clip 7.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, for example, has been recycling direct Russian propaganda. She says that our tax dollars are going to support Ukrainian Nazis, and that is a Putin line, that he's denazifying Ukraine, and that it's a Nazi state. Of course, it is a liberal democracy committed to equal rights for everybody and human rights, and it has the only Jewish president in the world outside of Israel. So calling it a Nazi state is such an affront and an insult to the Ukrainian people, and it's just a lie, And yet we're hearing a lot of that coming from various Republican members and different sources, to the point where you're getting now Republican chairmen finally of committees like the Foreign Affairs Committee saying that Russian propaganda has invaded the ranks of the Republican Party.
Okay, there is a on C-SPAN, Don Bacon, who is a Republican from Nebraska, had this to say about this controversy. This is clip 11.
I think there are some arguments in regards to Ukraine and Russia that is Russian propaganda. So, for example, saying Russia is fighting for Christianity, that's propaganda. They're actually attacking the evangelical church or Christians in Russia, and they're attacking Christians in Ukraine, for example. Saying that Ukraine represents the Nazis, that's more Russia propaganda. First of all, we've got to remember Zelensky is Jewish himself. About half of his family were murdered by the Nazis in the 1940s. And there are also a lot of stuff about how the black market, the Ukrainians are putting, giving weapons to Hamas, more propaganda.
Okay, more propaganda. And the impact, which was specified by another outstanding Republican member of the House, who is backing Speaker Johnson, thank goodness. His name is Mike Lawler. He's from upstate New York. And he was on ABC News just moments ago. That's clip 55.
What's your message to the likes of Marjorie Taylor Greene and others who are threatening Johnson?
Look, I think it is idiotic. I think it is not serving the purpose of their cause or the cause of the Republican majority. And in fact, is doing everything it can to undermine the cause. You don't like a bill? Vote no. We all have the right to do that. We all have the right to vote our conscience and our district.
And that is a right that the members of Congress are going to get. And the aid to Ukraine, which is so desperately needed, is going to be overwhelmingly approved because it's going to win the support of about half the Republicans. I certainly hope more than half, but also virtually all of the Democrats. And that's the way it works in Congress, is you get a majority and then you get what you want. There, meanwhile, is a question which was intensified by a front page story in the New York Times. The front page story in the New York Times talks about Israel's decision to send an attack against two generals from the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps of Iran. And some talk in the New York Times and elsewhere that Israel now regrets that move. Well, how was Israel actually saved then in the attack with some 300 projectiles, which were had murderous intent, hitting the land of Israel itself? Daniel Henninger in the Wall Street Journal says there was an unlikely hero who isn't even with us anymore, unfortunately, who saved Israel in this crisis. Who was it? We will get to that with Dan Henninger coming up on the Michael Medved Show.
Your outlet for outrage.
Outrageous.
The Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, always an honor to welcome back to the show Dan Henninger from the Wall Street Journal. His Wonderland column appears in the journal every Thursday, and it is indispensable for people who want to keep abreast of recent developments. He's been a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, and he writes most recently about an unlikely savior for the nation of Israel in the recent attack by Iran against the Israelis. Okay, Dan, who's the deserves at least much of the credit?
Well, my nominee, Michael, was in fact former President Ronald Reagan, who was President of the United States during the 1980s. That is a long time ago, to be sure. But I wrote the column, Michael, because it occurred to me watching the past weekend. I mean, it's an extraordinary event. Iran firing with its proxies over 300 ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, drones. We all watched, everybody in the world watched, the sky over Israel filling with these missiles. And Israel, with some help from the United States, shooting them out of the sky. And one news report after another was remarking how Israel's anti-missile defense system had saved the country, virtually no casualties whatsoever. And as I listened to these people remark time after time again about how the hero of the weekend was the anti-missile system, it occurred to me, well, in fact, it was Ronald Reagan who all the way back in 1983 first proposed defending against missiles like that with something called the Strategic Defense Initiative, which was immediately mocked by then Senator Ted Kennedy as Star Wars, as a joke, something that would never happen. And in fact, as you well know, Michael, the technology Reagan persisted, the technology went forward, and while we did not develop a space-based anti-missile system, we did develop technologies, air, sea-based, and ground-based, that were able to shoot ballistic and cruise missiles out of the sky. And so it was, in fact, Ronald Reagan's prescience way back in the 1980s that I think enabled Israel in this extraordinary event. No one really expected that they would have that much success, not even the Israelis themselves. But here we are with Reagan's legacy, and it is extraordinary, to be sure.
It is, and it's one of those things where if you look at the relevance today, one of the points that so-called hawks in the Republican caucus believe in is investing more money to give a greater security. And this entire idea of developing protective, defensive technology that can shoot missiles out of the sky, that was also ridiculed by a younger, much younger senator at the time from Delaware named Joe Biden. Has he come around at all to understanding the importance of this defensive technology that is capable of taking down enemy missiles?
Well, it's hard. It would be impossible, though with Joe Biden anything's possible, it would be very difficult not to recognize the importance and utility of missile defense systems now. And between Iran attacking, I mean, this is a state attacking another state. This is virtually like a Pearl Harbor moment for Israel. Not just the proxies, but a nation state attacking another with missiles, just as Vladimir Putin has been doing to Ukraine from the beginning, demolishing much of that country. And Ukraine has had some success defending itself with anti-missile systems. Joe Biden must inevitably recognize utility of this and its importance going forward as countries like Iran realize that missiles for them can be the great equalizer. We've seen the Houthis doing that. I mean, this ragtag group from Yemen virtually shutting down the Red Sea because of its ability to fire missiles at ships in the Red Sea. But ironically, the House Armed Services Committee, the Friday before last Saturday's attack, held a hearing in which they criticized the Biden administration for cutting $400 million out of the Anti-Missile Defense Agency. So that would suggest that Joe Biden, in fact, does not fully recognize the utility of these systems. And one hope, that was a bipartisan criticism, by the way, Michael, both Democrats and Republicans on that committee. And one may hope that they'll press forward with that criticism and get those cuts restored. Now, we've had a demonstration effect of just how important these technologies are.
Well, it's also important, and you talk about, again, a bipartisan effort in the House of Representatives to move forward with providing desperately needed ammunition and other basic materiel to the Ukrainians at this moment of crisis. You think and hope, I assume, that Speaker Mike Johnson is going to survive actually bringing this to a vote and getting that aid approved?
I certainly do. I think Speaker Johnson is showing extraordinary courage and pressing forward with this. As he has stated, he is aware of the importance of Ukraine not being defeated by Putin. Johnson said in the last few days he does not for a moment think that Vladimir Putin would stop at Ukraine. He would move next into the Baltics and probably threaten some of the other Eastern and Central European countries as well. And I think we have to give Speaker Johnson credit for recognizing this and pressing forward, perhaps at the risk of his own speakership. Personally, Michael, it is really difficult for me to see this rump group of Republicans actually forcing Mike Johnson out of the speakership. Does anybody really want to go through the process of again trying to find another speaker in an election year? It would just be so damaging to the Republican reputation if they were to blow up the speakership at this moment.
Amen. What do you think of Marjorie Taylor Greene as a candidate for vice president? She clearly wants the choice.
Yeah, I don't think Donald Trump is going to quite go that far. I mean, I'm more likely to think it's going to be someone like Tim Scott, but Marjorie Taylor Greene, that would be a bridge too far. She's just fine where she is.
I think that's a bridge that was already destroyed by a big tanker ship or something of that nature. I know that's really struggling for a tasteless analogy. Dan Henninger, never examples of tastelessness or anything other than insight and wisdom. His piece, Reagan Just Saved Israel, is every bit as provocative as the title suggests. It's linked up at our website at michaelmedved.com. When we come back, in the 1960s, late 60s, Columbia University was the center of sometimes very violent demonstrations and police raids and more. Now there is a new crisis mounting with police officers clad in riot gear and prepared with zip ties trying to clear out some demonstrators at Columbia. What are they demonstrating about? You can guess. We will get to that story and the very latest on the new Battle of Morningside Heights coming up on The Medved Show.
We just talk and talk and talk.
Your cultural crusader.
Radio jockeys like you are going to create more radical women. This is exactly why women become feminists, because they can't get a word in edgewise.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like ridiculous.
This is The Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, a report from the New York Times says the New York City Police Department moved just a few hours ago to quell a protest at Columbia University. They arrested dozens of demonstrators who had constructed an encampment of about 50 tents on campus. The arrests, which drew a new crowd of students to support the protesters, came the day after university leaders pledged to Congress that they would crack down on unauthorized student protests tied to the war in Gaza. Police officers clad in riot gear and prepared with zip ties began taking protesters into custody just before 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time as scores of demonstrators gathered in front of Butler Library. Since you have refused to disperse, you will now be placed under arrest for trespassing, a man repeatedly called through a loudspeaker. If you resist arrest, you may face additional charges. The scene played out less than 24 years after Colombia's president, Nemat Shafik, who is a distinguished economist. She has a glittering academic record. I don't think she has any danger of plagiarism or unattributed sources or anything like that. She is Egyptian. She is Egyptian-American now, and she and her husband share Islamic backgrounds. At least her husband is named Mohammed, or I think that's a previous husband. But in any event, Nemat Shafik and other top officials insisted to Congress that they would take a harder line in handling the protests that have embroiled campuses across the country since the October 7th attack on Israel by Hamas. Now, what they don't say in this New York Times article and update is that part of the problem with these protests is how threatening they have become to the many Jewish students at the Columbia University campus. Columbia in New York City has a one of the most substantial Jewish student bodies in Ivy League universities. And the idea that there are students there, and you'll notice the New York Times never mentions that these students who are camping and marching and chanting are chanting anti-Semitic slogans. And basically are extremely, they don't even mention what side of the issue they're from. Yeah, right. There are 50 Jewish students who are setting up tents on the campus of Columbia University and threatening other students and threatening other people and threatening the United States of America and the New York police and all of them. It's Jewish students doing that on behalf of Israel? Of course not. That doesn't happen. This is the way it sounded with police entering the encampment at Columbia and preparing to arrest anybody who refused to leave. Listen.
1, 2, 3, 4
Open up the prison doors!
Open up the prison doors!
5, 6, 7, 8
Smash the settler Zionist
state!
Will be arrested and charged with trespassing. This is the New York City Police Department. You are to participate in an unauthorized encampment.
Okay, this is a very difficult situation. It isn't limited to Columbia University. There's a story in the Seattle Times that I think is very much worth attention. The Seattle School District has put a high school teacher on administrative leave while it investigates comments by that teacher that he thought the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel was justified. Yeah. And questioned whether women had ever been raped during the attack. Now, the UN has investigated that and found out that these stories about rape on October 7th were true. Nevertheless, Ion Golash, who is listed as the Social Studies Department Chair at Chief Sealth International High School, was placed on administrative leave on April 11th. The move comes after Accuracy in Media, a conservative-leaning advocacy group with an ongoing campaign to expose anti-Semitism on campuses, distributed a video interview with Golash. The teacher was already facing criticism for Facebook posts that questioned accounts of the October 7th attack. In a video clip released this month, and this is truly extraordinary when you actually look at it, according to a video clip released this month, Adam Gillette, the organization's president, this is from Accuracy in Media, asked Golash whether what happened to Israel on October 7th was justified. Golash said yes. Gillette then asked Golash whether the rape of women at a music festival was justified. Where is the evidence that there was rape? Golash responded. Gillette then asked whether women were murdered at a music festival and whether that was justified. Yes, Golash, this teacher of your children in a public school, responded. The murder of innocent women just attending a music festival, that was justified in your opinion? Gillette then answered, no, but I think resistance against Israel is justified, yes. What's fascinating here is he goes to that issue of resistance. And there are freedom of speech issues involved here. And if somebody wants to question in some context what actually happened on October 7th, you're free to do that in a letter to the editor. But if you are teaching that to children, if you are basically using public facilities and taking public funds and taxpayer money as a teacher, and the whole issue of resistance to Israel, what are they talking about? There is no Israeli presence or involvement in Gaza. There hasn't been since 2005, which is almost 20 years ago, as you can figure out. Since in 2005, the Israelis moved out of Gaza entirely. So when he talks about resistance to Israel, what exactly is he talking about here? What he's talking about is a desire to destroy Israel. How do we know that? Because that is in the charter of Hamas. And his refusal to recognize that an attack on Israel, which had zero presence in Gaza for 19 years, that an attack on Israel is justified is outrageous. And yes, it can, at a time of a growing anti-Semitism, be deeply alarming. Let us hope that it's not just a leave that this teacher, Ian Golash, has been put upon, but that he is separated from the school until he recognizes the difference between free speech in his private life and free speech in a classroom and communicating ideas that are beyond the pale. And I believe that any kind of justification of the mass murder, and yes, the mass rape, which was identified by the UN with three different specific locations in which those gang rapes occurred by the soldiers of Hamas, not soldiers, the terrorists of Hamas. We are going to be talking a little bit about a progress report on the war in Gaza, especially with evidence that there are more and more Israeli troops who are being authorized to go home. Does that mean the goals have been achieved? We will deal with that. We'll also deal with a new story about activists who are planning to disrupt a national convention. Which national convention? The Democrats. What could happen here would be that the the Democratic Party will look more sympathetic when it's being attacked by the thugs and the creeps and the radicals of the pro-Hamas movement here in the United States. We're also going to be speaking to a political reporter who's been covering the confrontation in Congress over Ukraine, and Michael Rubin of American Enterprise Institute, on whether Israel made a mistake to attack those Iranian generals, leading to the attack back on Israel. That and more.